Okay. We're going to go ahead and get started. I want to thank you all for your patience. The Senate was having a animated conversation for the Senate as opposed to the House. You would have had, I'm sure, a much more animated conversation. So I apologize for the delay. We do have some House members that are going to have to be leaving in about an hour, and so anybody who will be testifying during that time, please do not take offense at that. There's some critical votes on the tax bill that need to be taken. What we're hoping to do today is we're going to continue our conversation from yesterday, talking about the important needs of Minnesota and as it relates to our kids and our future. And to get us off to a start, you'll have members, you've got a bunch of different information, that most of which you'll get to see soon. But the first thing on there happens to be from our Constitution. And if Senator Stumpf was here, I know very well we would be talking about this, and I think it helps ground us in the work that we're going to be doing over the next few weeks. So I'm just going to read it from Article 13, Section 1. The stability of a republican form of government depending mainly upon the intelligence of the people, it is the duty of the legislature to establish a general and uniform system of public schools. The legislature shall make such provisions by taxation or otherwise as will secure a thorough and efficient system of public schools throughout the state. And Representative Gregoline, I believe that that fits with the goals that we talked about yesterday and the importance of what we're doing here. What we're hoping to do is we have one person who we really want to have testify as part of our broader conversation about funding stability who had to skip physics and has to go to a badminton tournament. So if it's okay with you, it's all about what we're here for. So what we'd like to do is have Mackenzie Erickson come up and speak briefly, and then we will go back and have a more detailed version of the kind of more traditional going through the tracking sheets, and then we're going to have a presentation that Senator Rummel will be leading us through that has to do with making sure that we're putting money back into the formula through properly funding our cross-subsidy. So Ms. Erickson, are you? Welcome.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Mackenzie Erickson, and I first want to say thank you for having me here this afternoon. I am a senior at Southwest High School in Minneapolis. I am student body president. I take AP and IB classes, and I am National Honor Society member, so I don't know. Okay, but I have not always been so successful. There were signs from the beginning that I had a learning disability, but because of the wait-to-fail model, I was diagnosed in third grade. In kindergarten, the only word that I could recognize was red, and in first grade, the only book that I would pick from the shelf was Azu, which I had memorized. An investment was made in me by my family and by the school. Because of the fighting force of my mother, I am where I am today. I received funding from special ed to receive Kurzweil and Dragon, which are both assistive technology. And I also received Orton-Gillingham from a tutor. Not everybody is as fortunate as I have been. And I hope that other students with learning disabilities and other students in special ed will soon be able to receive what I have without a mother who comes to school every day. So not everybody's as lucky to have an involved parent. So what I ask of you is to please consider increasing funding for special ed. The money could be used, I would say the money would best be used to get assistive technology for students, which would make the students independent and able to take advanced classes. I would not have been able to handle the reading load without my technology. And the money should also be spent to help teachers better understand students with learning disabilities. Because I really feel that the teachers are trying their best. They just don't know where to start. So please consider what I have said today, and please invest in our children. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Erickson. If think part of the reason we want to make sure she got a chance to come in, you might want to stay for a minute in case anybody has any questions. But
any questions?
Is that you really represent why all of us are here. Mm-hmm. We want to both make sure that we're investing smartly and that we're able to help in partnership with students and teachers grow students that are well above average, and you mm-hmm. certainly help us get some clarity about that.
Yeah. Well, I really believe that everybody can be successful if they're given the chance, and I feel that that's not happening.
Thank you. Senator Salzman?
Yes. Just a question, Madam Chair, for a witness who joined us in the Senate about a month and a half ago, and there was a question that I think Senator Stumpf asked of you, and you already mentioned it, but I just want to make sure that everyone hears it. I believe that he asked you at what point you started in special ed.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if you would repeat the answer that you gave to him, because I'm not sure if you'll be coming back to testify later on some of the other
right.
initiatives that we have, but I think it was very, very important.
Yes. I was diagnosed with dyslexia in third grade, which happened because I could not read at all, and I was diagnosed because of the failure method. And I think it's important to emphasize that early diagnosis is. I mean, that's really what needs to happen. My parents knew that I had dyslexia. The school just wouldn't diagnose it until it was late.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Anybody else? Thank you, and good luck in your tournament.
Thanks.
Members, thank you for that departure. I think at this point, I'd like to have Mr. Nauman go start walking us through our tracking sheets. And does everybody have these now within the...
Madam Chair and members, I think what we'd like to do, because I think it would facilitate the conversation, or at least the walkthrough on the spreadsheet would be made a little bit easier, if Mr. Crow and I sort of go back and forth representing a discussion about Senate and House positions, where they're similar, where they might be different. And I think what we'd like to do is work off the spreadsheet that was just handed out today. It's got a broad bar across the top. It says in the upper left-hand corner, E12 FY08-09 budget appropriation tracking. And there's another one for levies that we will do shortly after we complete the aid tracking. And just to orient you across the top of the columns, first line numbers, which is a good reference point for members. We'll probably be calling out several of the line numbers as we begin to work through them, then the various programs. Somewhat unusual, beginning to work across the columns, the Senate has appropriated money in a few cases in fiscal year 2007. So on the Senate tracking, we are showing a column for fiscal year 2007 and then a biennial 06-07 increase and then a comparison with the February forecast. Then moving into the Senate columns for 8 and 9 with the various comparisons, including a Senate to House comparison, and then a Senate tails for fiscal year 2010 and 2011. And then finally, on the far right-hand side of the page, we'll have the House columns for 8 and 9 and 10 and 11. And I think for members' purposes, you may want to mentally think about the columns that are most important are probably one-third across the page difference Senate minus February for 8 and 9. We're going to be talking mostly about the 8 and 9 biennium. And then difference House minus February for fiscal year 2008 and 9. Those are the two columns that will show where each body appropriated money relative to the February forecast. And then there probably be occasions where we also speak about the difference between the Senate and the House, and those two columns are just immediately to the right for each biennium.
Madam Chair.
Representative Garland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, I just want to point out that part of what we do at the next meeting, whenever, or that will be tomorrow, I guess, whatever time that might be, We will, part of what we're going to do is also go through the House spreadsheet because, of course, we have, you have, this is your small bill, and we have, you know, the whole thing all in just one bill. So in order to clarify our bill, we have to go through ours again tomorrow. But this is fine to compare what you have here today, too.
And Representative Greiling, I think it's really important for all members to know that the only bill that we have brought to the table that is the companion to House File 6 is 2095. And so we will be obviously talking about the provisions that you have. And as we talked about yesterday, we are hopeful that we will have more revenue available to us than we had in the Senate bill. But the only bill that we are able to negotiate off of at this point in time is 2095. And so I think it does reinforce what the House has done, what the need really is, and where we'd like to go. But I think it's important for House members to know that what we're going through today is what we have to work with in this conference committee, at least at this point in time.
So, Madam Chair and members, as Mr. Crow did yesterday, the highlighting the formula allowances is the very first line. The Senate made no change in Senate File 2095 to the formula allowances, so those are shown at the base level. And the House appropriations, or rather the formula allowances for the House, 151, probably Mr. Crow, I should let you do that part, $151 increase in fiscal year 2008, 3%, and then a subsequent 155 increase in the second year. And I'll let you continue with line three.
Okay, Madam Chair and members, the House formula allowance increase plays through on several lines on the spreadsheet. Line three is obviously the $440 million. It's basically the big dollar amount that's for the formula increase. But there are several items that are linked to the formula. The next two lines, lines four and five, are formula separate programs that have that tie to the formula. So there's an additional $1.2 million of funding for the shared time and contract alternatives programs. And I would just also reference you to we'll just get to them when we get there.
And Madam Chair and members, now skipping down to line eight, one of the Senate provisions in Senate File 2095 was a limitation on the QCOMP program. Under the February forecast, the Department of Education makes estimations of growth in the QCOMP program, and the Senate did some analysis this year and determined that that it was able to recapture some of that growth, money that was assumed to come online as additional school districts and charter schools began to participate in the QCOMP program. The Senate committee felt that we could recapture some of that money and more effectively use those dollars in other places. So it captured $62 million of savings by that limitation. And then there's really two proposals that work in concert together. On line nine, the QCOMP program was also rolled out of the general education program. The committee felt that it was a program that was not appropriate in the general education program. And then so there is on line nine a reduction of $39 million. That will get added back in a subsequent line.
Madam Chair and members, on line 10, the House has a provision that raises the pupil weighting for kindergarten students from 0.557 to 0.86 in order to pay for some all-day kindergarten. That has a entitlement cost of about $105 million. So you see an appropriation increase because the change begins in fiscal 09 of $95 million. Then on line 11, the House bill makes some changes to the Limited English Proficiency Revenue Program. Two separate changes, three changes. One, currently the program is limited to students in their first 5 years of enrollment. That year cap is eliminated. The formula for basic LEP revenue is increased, and the concentration formula for LEP concentration revenue is eliminated. The net result is a cost of about $11 million in about $5.5 million per year. And then on lines 12 and 13, the House bill makes some changes to the extended time program. The first is to increase the formula at the same rate that the basic formula is increased, which costs about $5 million. Extended time is calculated against a different formula than the basic formula and is not linked, so the House bill increases it. And then on line 13, the maximum for extended time is currently 1.2 or 0.2 ADM added on top of the one maximum. The House bill increases that to 0.5 at a cost of around $15 million. And then on line 14, the House bill includes an increase in the gifted and talented formula of about $4 per year at a cost of about $7.5 million for the biennium. And then on line 15, the House bill has a provision that allows districts which are above the 95th percentile to levy the full $46 in one of the supplemental components of equity rather than the current $23 limitation. And that particular provision has a aid cost of about $200,000, and you see there's a levy cost of a couple million dollars when we do the levy tracking sheet.
And Madam Chair and members, also on line 15, the Senate also made that change on the $46 for those districts above the 95th percentile, but in addition to that recommendation, the Senate accepted the governor's recommendation to streamline some of the equity programs that have gotten a little bit unwieldy over the years, and including a hold harmless for those districts that would see less revenue as a result of that change on the transition program. So that's why the Senate numbers are a little bit higher than the House numbers. On line 16, the House and Senate, I believe, both took an update on the transportation sparsity program that the governor recommended. The Department of Education had done a new regression analysis on the transportation sparsity.
Excuse me for a second, Mr. Nauman. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Nauman, back to line 15, the equity simplification and then the $46, is that just pure and simple, or is that tied to your consolidated levy?
Madam Chair and Representative Greiling, no, there is no tie. That's a separate standalone. There will be a number of line items that we'll need to discuss primarily on the levy side. There is one line item here that I'll mention when we get to the consolidation on the aid side, but most of that's a levy conversation. So we'll
Thank
do
you.
That in the second spreadsheet that we talk through. Continuing line 16, the House and Senate also both took the transportation sparsity regression update that the department and the governor recommended in the budget. And that is shown on line 16. On
Madam Chair,
Senator Olson,
Madam Chair, and Mr. Nauman, there is still a difference. They took the same approach but got different numbers. Is there a reason for that?
It's not
that far apart, but
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, some of this may be tied to the difference in formula allowance. The transportation sparsity program is linked to the formula. There also is a lot of vagaries within the model that might drafters' differences in how what you count first may have resulted from that. You'll notice these numbers are actually probably a little bit different from the governor's recs as well.
So, Madam Chair, 100,000 here and 100,000 there, it does add up to money, too. So, but there will
Chair,
be an explanation somewhere along the way.
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, I don't mean to be too trite about this. when we do the calculations on the model, we end up with a total that we have a great degree of confidence in. At the end of the day, when we are splitting out the individual pieces so that members can see the policy decisions, there is some estimating that occurs in terms of which piece costs which amount. And it does depend on which piece you count first. For example, in the Senate recommendation, the equity revenue consolidation or the equity simplification that we carried is a governor's recommendation, largely entirely in the governor's recommendation. But when we priced our bill as a result of doing that, the equity simplification in the absence of a 2% formula allowance, the price of that was a little bit higher than it would have been had we priced the formula allowance first.
And Senator Olson, my guess is that as we go along that Mr. Crow and Mr. Nauman will have some ideas for us about how to reconcile those little nuances, and we'll be able to help us get there.
Madam Chair and members, skipping down to now to line 17, the governor's budget recommended an adjustment for receipts that school districts would receive as a result of a wind energy production tax. Both bodies accepted that, and it saves a little bit of money in each case. On line 18, the Senate accepted a governor's recommendation to streamline some of the calculations on the Job Z program. There was a little bit of a cost associated with that.
Madam Chair and members, on line 19, the House bill increases the operating capital equalizing factor, which generates more state aid and less levy, and this was one of the mechanisms that the House bill uses to reduce property tax levies. Then on line 20, the House natural resources bill carried three provisions that have an impact on the permanent school fund and the amount of revenue generated by the permanent school fund. The permanent school fund, the interest on the earnings of the principal of the permanent school fund are used to offset general education aid and save the state general fund money. And the House bill had one provision that generated more interest earnings and two provisions that reduced interest earnings. And the net effect is a cost to the general fund of about $46,000.
Madam Chair and members, on line 21, both bills accepted a governor's recommendation to roll the tax-based replacement aid program into the general education program. This was separately appropriated previously, and both bodies accepted that provision. And in this case, Senator Olson, we seem to have appropriated the same amount. On line 22, the consolidated levy, Representative Greiling, this is the case that I told you there would be a single line that represented the consolidated levy. In very brief terms, we'll get into this in more detail, I'm sure, when we get to the levy side. But the Senate position took the monetary value on a statewide basis of the equity levy, the operating capital levy, and the transition levy, which is roughly about $219 million on a statewide basis in fiscal year 2009, and then bought them down on the levy side by about $100 million. That carries an appropriation cost of about 90 on our 90-10 payment schedule. So that's the cost you see here. You'll notice in the tails it costs $100 million. Mr. Chair, I'm channeling Senator Stone. Madam Chair,
that's okay. We'll take that.
Madam Chair, members, on line 23 is one of about three lines that relate to a charter school limitation. The Senate provision included a cap of 150 charter schools on a statewide basis. There's about 133 currently, and when you make that sort of a cap, there is a limitation on some of the pupils that are assumed to be in the system, and that carries a general education reduction of about $453,000 in the 09 fiscal year.
Madam Chair and members, on line 25, you see another one of the House provisions for reducing property taxes. The House bill includes an increase in an indexing of the operating referendum equalizing factor, and as a result of that, there's an additional $39 million of state aid paid out, and we'll see levy savings on the levy tracking sheet. Line 26, there are some technical kind of provisions related to the online learning program, and they end up costing the state about $250,000 in the general fund. Then on line 27, there's a provision related to open enrollment students that transfer into a district and how they are counted in terms of referendum aid. This doesn't transfer referendum aid from one district or referendum revenue from one district to another, but it adds aid to the district that where the student enrolls, and so as a result costs the general fund about $2 million for the 2 years. Then on line 28, there's a location equity index in the bill, in the House bill, that provides supplemental funding based on cost of living, and it's capped at $500,000 per year.
Madam Chair and members, on line 29, there will be three lines that deal with the Eden Valley-Watkins School District and their environmental remediation members. I'm sure both bodies heard the conversation about how the Eden Valley-Watkins School District had a $126,000 impact as a result of a mercury spill cleanup associated with that. The Senate took the position that we would provide a loan to the school district, so we appropriate $126,000, and you'll see that in a line subsequent to that. Then the school district is allowed the opportunity to levy that money back over 5 years, and then a reduction in general education is taken to pay the state back. So what you're seeing here is really that third piece, the reduction in the general education equal to $25,000 each year. And, Madam Chair, what that leaves us with in general education program subtotal on line 32, the Senate is $11,345,000 above the base. The House position, $709,310,000 above the base.
Madam Chair.
Representative Garley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's why we want to go up over the other spreadsheet, too, tomorrow.
And Representative Garley, I think even more importantly, that's why we want real money so that we can make those things happen.
Absolutely.
Because as much as I like those other numbers, if they're not real, it would be a real disappointment.
We'll keep working on that.
Madam Chair and members, on line 35, we previously discussed that both bodies accepted the governor's recommendation to roll the appropriation for the tax-based replacement aid into the general education program. You see the final payment of $870,000 in fiscal year 2008, and then those lines are zeroed out. The balance of it, of course, we discussed previously. Madam Chair and members, on line 37, both bodies accepted the governor's recommendation to align the abatement calculations with the current slate of levies that we have in the system. The statute had gotten out of sync with the levies that we actually have on the books, and there's a slight cost that $1.2 million cost that both bodies are carrying. And then I think our next line, Madam Chair, line 41, there's an increase to the one-room schoolhouse. This is up in the Angle Inlet in the Warroad School District. Was previously a base of $50,000. There's a $15,000 increase each year put it in the base. And then, Madam Chair and members, this is the first occasion on line 42 where I'll ask you to look at the Senate numbers for fiscal year 2007. As the Senate was putting its bill together, the Browns Valley School District experienced a flood, and we did some quick calculations to provide the district with some declining pupil unit aid, $9,000 appropriated in fiscal year 2007, and then 55 and 60, respectively, for fiscal year 8 and 9.
Madam Chair and members, the House, in addition, provided some funding for the Browns Valley School District, $120,000 in 08 and $100,000 in 09, for a total of $220,000 for the biennium.
And Madam Chair and members, on line 43, the Red Lake School District received in the Senate bill some additional declining pupil unit aid associated with the shooting, $505,000. For that school district, most of it occurring in fiscal year 2008.
Madam Chair, the next change is on line 44, where the House provides some $100,000 one-time payment to the McGregor School District for some declining enrollment issues they're facing. And Madam Chair and members, on line 46 and 47, there are changes in the non-public pupil formulas for non-public pupil aid and transportation aid. The House bill adds about $2.2 million to those two programs as they are linked to the basic formula. So with the formula increase, those appropriations have to be increased as well. And then on line 49, the House has $100,000 for an education finance task force.
And Madam Chair and members, the Senate appropriated $75,000 for that. Also, we did skip over line 48, which is the consolidated levy adjustment. I neglected to mention that there is also this second line. When the Senate consolidated levies, in most cases, all school districts received, in most cases all, most school districts received levy reductions as a result of the consolidation, but there were a few, maybe about 10, that did not see reductions as a result of the consolidation, and the Senate appropriated a one-time $487,000 to hold those districts harmless for that purpose.
Madam Chair and members, the next change in the House bill is on line 50. The Brooklyn Center School District was added to the compensatory pilot program at a cost of $150,000 with $75,000 per year.
So, Madam Chair and members, skipping now to line 56 and 57, these two lines relate to the charter school cap of 150 charter schools statewide that the Senate recommended in its bill. This cap creates a $1.2 million reduction for the charter school building lease aid in fiscal year 9. It's all in fiscal year 9. And then the TALES carries a $6.8 million reduction. The charter school startup aid is reduced by roughly $4.2 million in the TALES as a result of that initiative. I think we're on line 46, Mr.
Chair. Madam Chair and members, 64. On line 64. Madam Chair, members, on line 64, the American Indian Scholarships line, the House bill transfers the function of administering the American Indian Scholarships from the Department of Education to the Minnesota Higher Education Office. And in addition to transferring the base funding of $1.875 million per year, the House bill takes $75,000 per year out of the Department of Education for a staff person to administer the program and transfers that into this appropriation for the higher ed office. So you see an increase of $150,000 on this line, and you will see a concurrent reduction of $150,000 in the department's budget when we get to that page. And Madam Chair and members, the next change is on line 66. Tribal contract schools increased $122,000, and that is an appropriation that's tied to the basic formula. So with the basic formula increase, tribal contract school aid goes up as well. Then on line 68, the House took a portion of the governor's proposed increase for statewide testing, adding $5 million over the biennium. The next change in the House bill is on line 70. The value-added index is moved from the Department of Education budget into the program budget. So this isn't $2.3 million of new spending. It's just a transfer from one part of the budget to the other. So you'll see a negative $2.3 million in the agency budget as well. And then on line 71, the House bill zeroes out and eliminates best practices, seminars, grants.
And Madam Chair and members, on line 71, the Senate increased by $300,000 a year, the best practices seminars. And Madam Chair and members, the next change in the Senate bill is on line 72, whereas, as I mentioned previously, there were two pieces to the Senate's QCOMP proposal, and this is the second piece where the $39 million was subtracted out of general education. It is added here as a grant program, and then that carries. So those two changes offset. It's the $39 million reduction in general education and $39 million added back here.
And Madam Chair and members, just a note on the best practices. There are some riders in the Senate bill that correspond to some spending in the House bill, and we can get into that when we do the side-by-side. But, for example, the Chance to Grow New Visions funding is in the House early childhood the section of the bill and is in the Senate best practices grants, and some of the other things are similar to House provisions. And Madam Chair and members, the next change in the House bill is on line 74, where an additional $16.3 million is added to the Advanced Placement International Baccalaureate program. And then on line 76, the House due to the increase in kindergarten waiting in the institution of all-day K in the second year of the biennium zeroes out the special line item for all-day for first-grade preparedness program, which is for all-day kindergarten. And so there's a reduction of $7.3 million in the second year of the biennium. Then on line 77, the House bill increases the collaborative urban educator program by $1.5 million.
And Madam Chair, the Senate bill also carries an increase to the base of $944,000 for the Q program. And Madam Chair and members, the Senate bill has the next change on line 79, where the Senate accepted the governor's recommendation for the Minnesota Reading Corps at $1 million a year.
And Madam Chair and members, the House bill has $1.5 million year for the Minnesota Reading Corps.
And Wordsworth,
right. There's a rider, and there's language that we'll look at when we look at the exact rider that allows it to be used on Wordsworth. Then the House bill, the next change is early reading intervention, $500,000 per year, which I believe I'm tracking on my spreadsheet as the same as line 100, but because it's for the SCRED program. The line 100 in the Senate bill is $450,000 per year. I suspect those may be for similar things.
Might be a little close. We probably should have talked about that one. It's probably the same thing.
I guess the next change is a House change. On line 84, the House provides $200,000 a year for the Office of Educational Accountability, appropriated directly to the University of Minnesota for a variety of purposes that we can look at when we go through the language comparison. Then the House has two appropriations, one for the 21st Century High Schools, and which is an initiative that would include AP, IB, and college in the schools. And then $8.8 million, and then and also includes career and technical education. And then on line 86, the House has a Minnesota teacher development proposal, which would also include the Q programs at $9 million. And we can, again, if you're interested in the detail, we can look at the detail, because both of those appropriations have riders to multiple organizations or for multiple purposes, and some of them are included in some of the Senate separate appropriations. So there are similar Senate appropriations to some of the riders that are within those two House appropriations.
Madam Chair and members, the next change in the Senate bill is on line 88. The Senate accepted the governor's recommendation for the Mandarin Chinese project, increasing on a one-time basis for the 08-09 biennium $250,000 a year.
And that, just as an example, that's one that under the House 21st Century High Schools appropriation, there's a $250,000 per year appropriation for world languages resources. So,
Madam Chair and members, on line 97, the Senate funded the STEM grant, science, technology, engineering, and math at $1.5 million a year, $3 million increase for the biennium. After-school community learning grants in the Senate bill are funded at $3.5 million for a biennial increase of $7 million. I believe that this, and that is carried in the base. There's a peculiarity here in that this was a provision that was previously that was funded in the early childhood bill originally in the House. So the Senate is carrying it here because it carried in Article 2. But when we get to some of the totals, the numbers won't necessarily agree because of that distinction. The House bill increases at 2.7 and 2.6 in 8 and 9, respectively, and not into the tail. Madam Chair and members, professional teaching standards grants one-time funded at $500,000 in fiscal year 08. The St. Croix River Education District, I think this will get some conversation later in the conversation today, perhaps, for RTI, $450,000 per year. The Libra Academy Sober School was provided a grant of $25,000. And so the Education Excellence accounts under in the Senate are $53.3 million above the base, and the House at $43.2 million. Madam Chair and members, the major changes in the Senate bill are coming up in the beginning of this next discussion, where we will talk about special education. And to begin the conversation, I'd like to sort of dispense with fiscal year 2007 so we don't get mired in it in the conversation. So the unfortunate aspect where the page breaks fell is I'm going to have to ask you to kind of flip back and forth. In statute, in really rough terms, the Minnesota has a special education reimbursement system for special ed costs that, in very simple terms, about 68% of salaries and benefits, and then there's a few other percentages for other purposes. In the fiscal year 2000 or in the 2003 legislative session, the legislature accepted a governor's recommendation to place a cap on overall special education spending. As costs for special education have grown, this has created a so-called cap gap, the difference between what the statutory formula says that we will pay and the amount that and the amount that's actually appropriated. So the Senate took the position this year that they were going that the Senate would eliminate the cap gap beginning in fiscal year 2007, and that carries three changes. And I'm now looking at the different Senate minus February for 6 and 7. On line 108, there is a $123.5 million increase to special education regular. And flipping to the second, the third page, there's an increase to excess cost of $1.8 million, roughly. Thank you. And then the transition program, students with disabilities, is increased by $673,000. These initiatives fully fund the statutory formula for those line items and eliminate the cap gap. Now, Madam Chair and members, if you flip back to the next page, because some of these initiatives work together, and Mr. Crow, with your indulgence, I'll just work through our pieces and then let you do what you do yours. Continuing on line 108, the Senate then did two additional things into special ed. First, it accepted the governor's recommendation to consolidate some of the special ed lines. That includes the transition with disabled, transition disabled, as well as rolling in the Part C that was separately appropriated out of last year's legislature to rolling those into both regular and excess costs. This was a governor's recommendation. But that governor's recommendation was also combined with a Senate recommendation to reinstate the the program growth factors at 4.6% for regular special ed and 2% for excess cost. So what you will note is that on line 108, the 123 continues to grow. It turns into 164, 196, 230, et cetera. And that's the result of the 4.6% growth factor. As the transition disabled is rolled into the regular, first thing it's done, it's rolled in, but it's also inflated commiserate with the Senate position to deal with the cap gap and institute those growth factors. So there's additional increases for the transition as it's rolled in, increasing at $2.1 million. There's relatively no change as a result of adding the programs adding the transition disabled in. You'll also note that on line 111, the Part C expansion to special ed regular does not carry a cost in fiscal 8 and 9, but does begin to carry costs in 10 and 11. On line 115, Again, you'll note that in the 07 fiscal year, that cost 1.7, but then escalates to 4 million and 6.2. That is the effect of the 2% growth factor on excess cost. Again, there's cost associated in excess cost with the Part C rolling in, and then you'll see that the transition on line 118 has been there's a reduction associated with that change. There's a lot of things going on here, so the Senate included some summary numbers at the bottom. That's what line 125, 126, and 127 attempt to show, so that you can, those numbers sum the relevant pieces in the spreadsheet for regular special ed, excess cost, and the transition, and those numbers will tie directly to the spreadsheet, or directly to the bill appropriations. So overall, the Senate increases special education in fiscal year 2007 by $125.9 million, $376 million in fiscal years 8 and 9, and $519 million in 10 and 11.
Madam Chair and members, the House bill adds approximately $100 million in 8 and 9 to special education. Basically, the special ed excess cost is inflated in the first year by about 22% and then 1% in the second year. So basically, all of the increase was built into the first year. And the same with regular special education revenue, which was inflated at about a 6.5% rate. And then a small additional amount was added in 09 in order to make sure that maintenance of effort requirements would continue to be met. And so you see the total on line 123, that $106 million is added, and the House also went along with rolling in the transition and Part C programs into special education. And then the House bill also, I would just note on line 121, it has $20,000 for a special education task force.
So, Madam... Yeah, I think it's yours.
And Madam Chair and members, we move out of special ed then into facilities and technology. If you look at line 134 and 135, the House bill increases the equalizing factor for debt service equalization aid and creates an agricultural land debt service tax credit. The combination of those two lines is about $25 million of tax relief on the debt side. And the next change in the House bill is on line 137, where the House bill adds, in the current biennium, only $8.9 million to fully fund the telecommunications access program, which is prorated right now. So the numbers you see for 8 and 9 are the actual costs in the telecommunications program.
Madam Chair and members, the Senate increased telecommunications access by $8.3 million. And I think the next change, both bodies accepted the legislation designed to deal with the security reimbursement costs associated with the shooting at the Red Lake School District. This was money that was previously appropriated but canceled due to some peculiarities of the legislation as it was originally passed, and both bodies accepted $132,000 to pay for those costs. Then, Madam Chair and members, on line 42, both bodies appropriate $126,000 for the environmental, for the mercury spill at the Eden Valley Watkins School District. The difference in the Senate position is that there was that loan and repayment system that I described earlier when we were going through general education.
Madam Chair and members, on line 144, the House bill has $3 per pupil for technology funding on a one-time basis in fiscal 2009 only. So there's a cost of about $29 million for that. Then on line 145 is a $20,000 appropriation in the House bill for a technology task force. Then, Madam Chair, the next change in the House bill is on line 152 with the cent and a half increase in the lunch reimbursement, adding about $3 million of cost to the general fund over the base for school lunch and food storage program.
Madam Chair and members, the Senate did the identical position.
And then, Madam Chair and members, on line 154, due to the consolidation of the Plainview School District, they faced fund balance reductions in their ECFE and school readiness accounts, and the House bill appropriates $17,000 on a one-time basis to reimburse the district for these fund balance penalties.
Madam Chair and members, moving down to libraries, the on line 159, the basic support for libraries, basic support grants for libraries was increased under the Senate bill by $753,000.
And Madam Chair, members, the House bill increases basic support by about $5 million, with most of that coming starting in the second year of the biennium.
On line 160, the multi-county, multi-type library systems was increased by $280,000 under the Senate bill.
And the House bill makes a similar increase of $754,000.
The Senate bill on line 162 increases regional library telecommunications aid by $1.5 million.
Again, the House bill makes the same makes a similar adjustment, but increases by $2 million. And then on line 163, the House bill includes $4.5 million to facilitate the Hennepin County Minneapolis City Library Systems merger.
And members, I think we'll move on to the Children and Family Support Services accounts, beginning on line 176, with changes in the House bill.
Madam Chair and members, you didn't get to meet our House fiscal analyst yesterday for early childhood education. She's not here right now. Her name is Emily Adrians, and she's very pregnant, so we're not sure how long she'll be with us. So if you see a very pregnant woman sitting back here, that's who there is. I'll do my best to help fill in, you know, on her behalf. She also covers some human services issues, so she's probably there right now. So on line 176, the House has a $1.9 million increase in the school readiness program, and has a school readiness board with a $86,000 appropriation for the biennium, appropriates $1 million for the LifeTrack Resources Program and $150,000 for the Minnesota Learning Resource Center, and that's one that I mentioned is in the Senate bill up in the best practices grants. And then both the House and Senate increased the early childhood family education aid formula to $120 at a cost of about $5.5 million.
Madam Chair and members, both the House and, the Senate bill increases the health and developmental screening aid allowances with a cost of about $1.4 million in the first in the 08-09 biennium.
And Madam Chair and members, the House adds $786,000 for the biennium to the kindergarten readiness assessment. And
then, Madam Chair and members, you see the effect for both the House and Senate for the early childhood Part C eligibility as it's rolled out of a separate appropriation on line 188. There's a negative $1.48 million for both the House and the Senate. This was, we previously discussed this in special education conversation.
Madam Chair and members, on line 190, the House adds $1 million per year to the Head Start program. And then, Madam Chair and members, on line 193 has $1,250,000 per year for early for scholarship demonstration projects. Line 194, $2 million for the early childhood community hubs, and $225,000 on line 195 for early childhood teacher training. Then in the prevention area, on line 200, the House bill adds $361,000 for the biennium to the Adults with Disabilities program and creates the Youth Healthy Development Grant Program on line 202 with $500,000. And then, Madam Chair and members, on line 207 adds $3.6 million for the biennium to Adult Basic Education Aid, and on line 208 adds $150,000 for GED tests, and then adds a separate provision on line 209 for GED tests for homeless at $100,000 in fiscal 09.
So, Madam Chair and members, I think we are now moving down to the Department of Education. The Senate made a reduction to the the base budget of $100,000. This was to provide that $100,000 as a rider to the Duluth Children's Museum, which we'll see in a subsequent line. Then the Senate made a 3.25% increase to all state agencies for salary and benefits. This is slightly above the governor's recommendation. That increase carries a cost in 8 and 9 of a $1.5 million increase.
Madam Chair and members, the House, you'll see in each of the agencies added 2% per year, which was the governor's recommendation, at a cost of $934,000 for the Department of Education.
And you'll see both the Senate 3.25 and the House 2% carried through to the Board of Teaching as well as the Board of Administrators. Skipping to line 28, the Senate provision for the Children's Museum, $50,000 a year, which carries that's $100,000 over the biennium. Then the Senate on line 230 zeroed out the Minnesota Washington D.C. office rider on the Department of Education appropriation. We'll see when we get to the language. But there's prohibition language carried in the Senate bill.
Madam Chair and members, on line 231, you see where the House moved the value-added index assessment to the program budget and out of the agency budget. So no net change in the overall budget. And then on line 235, the House has a early hearing loss intervention coordinator at $40,000 per year in the agency. And on line 236, you see the reduction taken to move the American Indian Scholarships Program administration to the Higher Education Office, $75,000 per year. And lines 237, 8, and 9 are rulemaking provisions that are in the House bill. $7,000 is provided for each to the agency for rulemaking for each of those provisions.
And Madam Chair and members, moving on to the Purpich Center, the first change is that the base for the Purpich Center in the Senate bill was increased by $150,000 a year, and then the salary and benefit base adjustment at $513,000 increase in 8-9.
And the House provided the similar 2% per year at $314,000 for the School for the Arts.
Madam Chair and members, on line 252, now in the Faribault Academy, the base budget was increased for the biennium by $460,000, and then the 3.25% base adjustment of $974,000.
Madam Chair and members, the House bill includes the salary and base adjustment at 2% per year at about $600,000, and then includes three specific appropriations that the Academy's asked for campus security system, computer technology and staff, and for costs related to their mainstreaming contract. And those three provisions added about $500,000 to the Faribault Academy's budget.
And so, Madam Chair and members, there are a couple of subtotals, but material to the Senate bill is line 273 before we actually discuss the totals. In the Senate tax bill, the tax committee allocated $78 million for property tax reductions into an account in the general fund created in the tax bill called the Education Improvement Account. This $78 million was slated for property tax reduction, but the tax committee instructed the K-12 committee to spend it as part of the consolidated levy. So we are carrying that as a net revenue to the Senate bill because it's not added to our target as an additional 78. It's carried as a tax target. So it's a bit of a couple of hoops to run through here. But when you net that out against against the Senate spending, and adding the line 275 and the on line 275, adding the fiscal year 2007 to the 2008 and 9 biennium, you hit the $498 million target that the Senate had.
Representative Garley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We are so glad to hear that the Senate has a precedent of mixing and matching bills and being creative. That's a very good trend, and we will look forward to more of it. And then I just want to make the point that actually the House bill, we don't have to mix and match at all or find any more revenue, because our bill is actually funded with or without any new revenue.
And Representative Greiling, just to clarify, when this bill went to the Tax Committee, that's when it got to be joined with this money. So unlike the other money that you're hoping we can attach, it actually was connected here as a tax portion.
Madam Chair, we understand how it is when you go to the Tax Committee. Some things happen there, and we hope you go there again.
Madam Chair, there's one more provision that we haven't hit yet. There's a non-general fund provision on line 281. The House has $2.5 million of TANF funding for the biennium for early childhood scholarships. And in addition, the House bill has an appropriation under the State Government Special Revenue Fund to the Department of Public Safety for the Family Partnership Centers something like that. And so there's been discussion of putting that in the public safety bill, but it never ended up there. So far, I think the House, it's a technical change correction that I think has ended up only in the House education bill and not in any Senate bills.
Madam Chair, I believe we originally had it in the deficiency bill, but I'm not sure it got funded there. So I think you're correct. So Madam Chair and members, on line 290, the grand total general fund and TANF numbers are displayed. Again, to get the Senate position, you would add both the fiscal year 7 and the 8 and 9 totals to get the $498 million target. The House position being $947 million above the base. So, Madam Chair and members, that does conclude the aid tracking for the 2007-E12 Conference Committee. At your pleasure, we'll now move on to the levies. That's the other document with very similar, slightly different type here and oriented a little bit differently. And given that Mr. Crow is going to have to step away, maybe what I will do is first orient you through what we're looking at here. Again, this the title of the document, E12 FY 8 and 9 budget, property tax tracking. The first column of numbers is fiscal year 2008, taxes payable 2007. But the first year in which we can really affect levies is going to be in taxes payable 2008. That's fiscal year 2009. So that's the second set of numbers. And then arrayed across the top would be the Senate numbers with a difference relative to current law, then the House relative and a difference relative to current law, and then a difference Senate minus the House. Then we repeat that process for for the 2 years in the tail. So fiscal year 2010 is the middle groupings of numbers with House and Senate comparisons. And then for fiscal year 2011. I'll work through the general education pieces first for the Senate, and then allow Mr. Crow to discuss the House provisions. The first change for the Senate is on line 7, where the transition levy, previously $24 million, has been zeroed out under the Senate bill. The next line is equity levy, also zeroed out, and the same for operating capital. These are three programs that under current law are calculated on the aids and levies are calculated within the general education program by district, and the Senate is eliminating those calculations and creating the so-called consolidated levy. I would then like to drop you down to line 16 and come back to the QComp for just a moment. You'll notice on line 16 there is an increase of $119 million. If you were to sum the values of the transition equity and operating capital levies under current law, you would reach a number of about $218 million, $219 million. And remember when we spoke about the consolidated levy as we were talking about this on the aid side of the tracking, I mentioned that there was $100 million of reduction in the Senate bill associated with the consolidated levy. The difference between that 218 for those three levies and the amount that gets added back is, that's where you see the 119 come in. Instead of adding the 218, the Senate is actually reducing levies on a statewide basis in general education by 119. So that deals with the consolidation. And Madam Chair and members, on line 11 is the alternative compensation, commonly referred to as QComp. Those levies are $18.8 million under current law. The Senate, as I mentioned previously, makes two changes. First, the Senate recaptures some growth equal to $7 million, and then it rolls the program out of general education. So you'll notice that there is a savings of $11.8 million associated with that. The number on line 15 will get added back as part of the grant program in a subsequent line. So in total, the general education program under the Senate bill is reduced by $118.8 million, and of course, some of that gets added back in a subsequent line.
Madam Chair and members, the changes in the House bill in the general fund are detailed. Starting on line 7, there's a small change in transition levy. Some of the changes you'll see are just due to pupil count changes because of the added pupils created when we increase the pupil weighting for the all-day kindergarten program. So there's more pupils, so that's going to drive some increases on the levy side or some changes on the levy side. But then if you look on, line 8, you'll see the House provision to add $1 million, and there's another makeup for the fiscal 2008, but this is the revenue for districts that are above the 95th percentile in the $23 versus $46 per pupil of revenue. Then on line 9, you see the impact of the House reducing the or increasing the equalizing factor for operating capital. It reduces the operating capital levy by about $80 million. And then the QComp change is also just a technical change. So you see the total general fund change on line 18. The House reduces by $78 million in this area, reduces levies. Then if you look on line 21, you see the referendum costs of those added pupils, because obviously some of those pupils are in districts where the all-day kindergarten pupils are in districts that have passed operating referendums. So there's an additional $5.5 million of operating referendum generated by those pupils. Then on line 22, the House, one of the other levy reduction provisions in the House bill is increasing referendum equalization, and that reduces levy by a net of about $36 million, and that includes an estimate of a certain amount of added referendums with the higher equalizing factor that some districts that were unable to pass will be able to pass some. So that's a net number of an increase in levy due to that behavioral effect and the overall reduction because of the higher equalizing factor.
On line 24 is the levy savings associated with some of the Job Z streamlining recommendations that were accepted from the governor's recommendation under the Senate bill. The Senate bill also carried a provision for a couple of school districts to levy for some early retirement health benefits. That carries a $350,000 cost on line 30.
And Madam Chair and members, on line 32, the House has a provision that allows for some districts that qualified for cooperative secondary facilities grants to do severance and retirement levy, and that is estimated to cost $300,000 per year. Then on lines 37 and 38, both bills make changes to the Safe Schools levy. The House bill adds an amount to the overall Safe Schools levy and then allows members of intermediates to levy an additional amount for Safe Schools if they're a member of an intermediate, which is the provision that's also in the Senate bill.
And Madam Chair and members, on line 41, the Senate increases the ICE Arena levy by $105,000. This is a change, again, associated with the 2003 budget cutting session where several levies, including the Safe Schools levy, were limited to control some of the overall levy impacts when we were making reductions on the aid side. The ICE Arena is now returned to 100% levy, 100% cost funding. And then, Madam Chair and members, on line 46, I mentioned previously that the alternative compensation program was going to be added back. So you see $11.8 million of the alternative compensation program becoming a grant program. Madam Chair and members, the career and technical levy is increased in both bills. The Senate increases by 2.1, as does the House. Madam Chair and members, skipping now to the next page, we're getting down to
the same.
Sarah Olson.
Madam Chair, on the current technical, you said the House.
Madam Chair and members,
they didn't do that.
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, you're correct. I was looking at the wrong column. I'm even getting to the point where these numbers are too small.
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, the House provided additional career and technical revenue, but it's provided about $6 million per year in aid, so the districts don't have to levy an additional amount.
Okay, thank you.
On line 54, the next change in the Senate bill allowing the Clearbrook Gonvic to include as part of their health and safety expenditures the demolition of a school building. It carries a $100,000 levy cost. And on line 61 and 62, two levies were included in the Senate bill that carried levy impacts for disabled access. These are fund transfers from the disabled access to the general fund, $81,000 for Red Rock Central and $226,000 for Floodwood. Then, Madam Chair and members, on line 75 is a lagging effect associated with the Senate's limitation on the QCOMP program growth. When the Senate made a change to the QCOMP growth effective in fiscal year 2008, I mentioned at the top of the levy discussion that really we can't affect the levies for fiscal year 2008. So that impact is carried as a final adjustment on line 75, where the Senate captured an additional $6.9 million of levy savings associated with the 2008 growth recapture. And then, Mr. Carlin, 76, I think that's just technical, isn't it?
Madam Chair, yes, that's just a technical adjustment.
Okay. The Senate and House also both took the governor's recommendation for abatements. We discussed this on the aid side. That carries $933,000 in taxes payable 2008 savings. So in total, the general fund levies for the Senate are reduced by $109.2 million, and for the House, $102.9 million. Madam Chair and members, the next set of numbers is the community service fund. Very few changes there in both the House and Senate. The only changes there are technical related to the abatement levy changes that were made. So there's relatively nothing to talk about there. Now we're moving on to the debt service.
Madam Chair and members, the debt service fund is where you see some of the levy impact of the increased equalization aid and the ag tax credit. On line 123, you see an increase of $4.5 million on the basic debt levy, and what's happening there is the maximum efforts districts are increasing their when we do tax relief for them, or when we raise the equalizing factor, because they have a fixed tax rate, they have to levy more regardless of how much state aid they're getting through the equalizing factor. And so there's some additional levy there. And that's also where the behavioral effect of a lower equalizing factor on the presumption that there will be additional debt referendums passed with a higher equalizing factor. So that's where you see that net effect. And then on line 125 is the saving is the levy reduction, and 126 from the higher equalizing factor and the ag land tax credit.
Madam Chair and members, on line 128, the Senate included a debt service fund transfer for the Holdingford School District, equal to $150,000 of levy impact. And then both bodies, again, dealing with the abatement changes on line 146, had $349,000 of levy savings. So in total on line 156, the Senate's debt service fund is down $198,000, and the House position is down $22.4 million. So in total, if you skipped all the way down to the line labeled on 179, total certified levies post credits, the Senate reduces total levies by $109.5 million. The House position is down $125.3 million. Relative to current law, you'll notice on line 181 that the current law was going to levies were going to increase on a year-to-year basis of at 11.8%. The Senate reduces that percentage change down to about 5.7%, and the House reduces that to 4.8%. So, Madam Chair, I think that unless Mr. Crow has any concluding comments, that concludes the tracking portion. Something always a little ponderous to get through.
Thank you. You both did a great job. We're going to obviously, as we go through the side-by-sides, I believe tomorrow we'll have some more time to be asking specific questions. But just before we move on to the next part of this afternoon, does anybody have any questions for either Mr. Crow or Mr. Nauman? Okay. Thank you. Thank you both. What we thought we'd do is now is to kind of get back to where we started at the beginning of today, focusing on some of the reasons why we made the decisions we did within the target we were given. And Senator Rummel has been spending a lot of time on this particular issue, and will provide a presentation for us along with some testimony. And if you have questions along the way, feel free to ask her. I know that our other members of this committee certainly have some advice and thoughts to give on this matter as well. Senator Rummel.
Madam Chair, thank you. And members of the committee. Before I begin, I would like to acknowledge the leadership of Senator Stumpf in helping the Senate come to its position in its bill. I believe that he has departed to us some very clear thinking that I will try to see if I can capture on his behalf. And I would also like to acknowledge Mr. McHenry and Mr. Nauman for their help in preparing this presentation. My goal in this presentation is fourfold. First, we'll give you just a quick review on the background that helps us understand the magnitude of the cap on the growth factor for special education. You just looked through the numbers, what it means in the spreadsheets, but I'll go through it in more of a story fashion. Second, we need to discuss the consequences of that legislation in 2003. Third, we want to quickly sketch key elements of the bill, which Mr. Nauman and has gone through in detail in terms of the numbers. And finally, I want to make a case for the Senate position. And right in the middle, we will have some folks giving us testimony. I'm using this handout that some of you had. I think it's easy sometimes if you have pictures to go along with the words. As Mr. Nauman said earlier, back in 2003, steps were taken to balance the state's budget. And education funding played a role in those steps. And there were two things that happened. First, there was a shift that was made in the way the state paid education for its services. Those shifts were fully repaid by 2006. So that's been corrected. The second thing that happened in 2003 is that there was a cap placed on the special education growth factor. This is the bill that has not been paid back. Now, we already know that the federal government is not fully funding special education up to its promise of nearly 40%. I think the federal government gives us about 17% of its obligation. That's not part of my conversation this afternoon. The trouble is that in 2003, Minnesota began to take a step backwards in its obligation to fund special education. As Mr. Nauman said earlier, the statute used to require the state to pay 68% of the salaries, that's excluding benefits, 52% of contracted services, and 47% of related supplies. Right now, what that translates to is that for every $100 that the state owes the districts, they receive only $79. So this is an unpaid bill that we need to address. Like any of us who have credit cards, if we don't pay our credit cards, those balances quickly begin to accumulate. And that's what's happening with this unpaid bill, the cap that we have placed on the special education growth factor is accumulating at a kind of astronomical pace. If you look on page 2, there's a graph. In 2005, the cap gap, as we call it, was only $61 million. I say only guardedly. By 2011, that gap is $335 million. That's a five-fold increase in the unpaid bill. This is a sleeping giant. We need to address this sleeping giant. Otherwise, it will be totally out of control. Unpaid bills always do get paid. They don't get paid necessarily by the right people, however. In this case, the unpaid bill is being paid by the school districts. When the Senate does not fund the growth factor, school districts pick up the bill. The graph.
Excuse me, Senator Rummel, just for a second. You said the Senate. You mean the legislature in the state?
The legislature in the state. No, not the Senate.
I would hate to have the House members think that we had some extra money that we were willing to find.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sorry to throw you off.
No, that's just fine. The debt, if you look at the graph that we have there at the bottom, the portion of the obligation of the state under the current plan continues to decrease, and the portion that the districts need to pick up continues to increase. And so by 2011, if we don't change things, our school districts will be picking up more than one-third of the obligation that the state originally made.
Excuse me, Mrs. Chair.
So this is an important...
Senator Salzman?
Just to comment, perhaps, Madam Chair. You know, when you mentioned that local school districts are funding this, would it be perhaps appropriate to say that they're funding it by taking money from many general classrooms?
They are taking money from their general fund. They are using levy funds. They are using a lot of sources to pay this bill. And we'll get into what's happened in a second.
Okay, well, thank you, Madam Chair. And just one more question. Since we've lost three of our conferees here, I certainly hope that those who are here will certainly take note, because this is a very important part of the Senate proposal, and it's, I think, key to where we put our dollars and our targeted dollars into our budget.
Thank you. You underline my point. Finally, the unpaid bill. When we started thinking about this early in the session, we asked ourselves, how does this impact the entire state? And if you look in your packet, you've got a map that's also sitting on the counter behind. And I believe you've been given a spreadsheet that gives you a sense of how widespread the underfunding is. This isn't something that's just happening sporadically in one district or another. If you look at the red and the dark orange areas on the map, those are districts who are between $300 and $500 per pupil underfunded. It's a significant challenge that lies in the hands of those districts. And some might argue that whatever is given to them on the general fund gets used up by taking care of the special education mandate. As you know, our districts by law must fund special education. And so they have to get the dollars from somewhere. And whatever we give them tends to trickle away. Finally, in Mr. Nauman's walkthrough on the spreadsheet, he walked you through what changes are occurring. This slide illustrates that to restore the growth factor would restore some stability. If you look at the top line, what we have are special education expenditures projected out to 2011. The bottom line with the diamonds in it is what current law funds. This is just another variation on that earlier chart I showed you. The middle line, this is the Senate's bill. The middle line restores the trajectory on how we will be sharing the balance of special education obligation. It restores at least some measure of stability. Anybody who lets their credit card get overburdened pays other consequences beside having a huge debt on their backs. Some people find themselves either falling into bankruptcy and or losing their credit rating. These are severe consequences. It's very similar, I believe, with unfunding or underfunding our special education costs. On the first hand, underfunding special education creates instability in the districts. Capping the growth factor does not change the cost of delivering education services. Some of our witnesses will address the reason why it doesn't change it. Not only do we have a growing number of children with autism, I believe you were given a chart on that, there is also an increased number of children with much more severe disabilities. And the cost of delivering services, the professionals that deliver these services, are highly trained, and they are expensive people to employ. In addition, it puts our districts in jeopardy. In talking to various superintendents around the state, as you know, the Senate Education Policy Committee visited a variety of school districts. We found some school districts that are hanging on by their fingernails. Remember, this is a mandate. School districts must provide these services. If they fail to provide the IEP services, either they could suffer a lawsuit, which, as you know, is very expensive, or they could suffer financial consequences, penalties.
Senator Rubble, just before you go on, I just want to ask if I didn't want to get you midstream. But the chart that's on page 5, just to clarify, what we were trying to do is the chart is showing that we were continuing back on the growth trajectory that was in place prior to the cuts in 2003. Correct?
Exactly. If it unbends that diamond line, and it kind of straightens it up on the same trajectory.
Thank you.
What if we go back to page 5, that chart shows us is this is not new money. This is simply fulfilling an obligation that we gave ourselves before 2003 and put a hold on because of the state's deficit. So this is not new money for special education. So the second damaging consequence is the damage of credibility. Now, I was 9 years a school board member. I'm only 4 months a senator. And there's a larger and more immediate experience with being a school board member. And I believe in my school district in those 9 years, I had to participate. I didn't have to. It was part of my job to help in running school levies. And believe me, it is very difficult to go out year after year after year and ask people for money and say, but nothing will change. So I have a little drawing on the side. It's a little crude, but this is the reality. I'm also, many of you don't know this, but I'm in my professional life, I'm a communications consultant. And when you communicate with people, it isn't just explaining line by line everything that goes on. There are perceptions out there. The average person in the public sees that bucket on the table. They hear from the newspapers or read in the newspapers and hear on TV, oh, we got new money in education. What they don't see is that bucket under the table, the leak that we currently have by not funding special education growth factor. And so that creates a credibility gap in our public. As you know, many, many districts went out for referendum last year. And I don't know the exact number, but almost two-thirds of them failed their referenda. And I believe part of it is because our public is losing confidence in the way schools are dealing with dollars. And the sad thing is that it is not the school district's fault. The sad thing is that the legislature in 2003 backed off on an obligation. It is our responsibility. It's our obligation. And yet the public is taking it out locally. And this is tragic. We have to do something about this. Sorry if I get passionate about this. I'd like to invite some of the witnesses that I have with me to come to the table. And I believe I have your names in order on the sheet. Do you have those? Barbara Burke. I don't have my witness sheet. If maybe Kevin could get me a copy of it.
Yes.
Yes.
So, Rommel, your first one is listed on the sheet is Barbara Burke.
Thank you. Barbara Burke and on my left and Denny Ulmer on my right are both special education directors. And they can speak to you. I hope they will address the issue of why special education costs rise a little bit faster than regular education costs and where those dollars go. Why simply putting a cap on special education costs will not solve the problem. Barbara, first.
Welcome, Ms. Burke.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Rummel. Thank you for this opportunity to speak with you about the need for fully funding special education. My name is Barbara Burke. I'm Director of Special Services in White Bear Lake. And I am going to try to share with you a little bit about why special education costs as much as it does and why those costs go up faster than others. And I'm going to share some data from White Bear Lake to kind of show really kind of how we operate as that bucket under the table. And then thirdly, I'd like to address some of your concerns about how we rectify the situation. I do believe you have a copy of a handout at the top says why special ed costs keep increasing faster than other education costs, and I'll be walking through that. First of all, there are two key reasons, I believe, why special education is such a high-cost service. And that is because, as Senator Rummel said, the staff for special education are necessarily highly qualified staff. If you think of the first day that a classroom teacher walks into a classroom, generally that classroom teacher has a BA. For a special education teacher to be fully licensed for special education, their licensure takes them to about 3 credits less than a master's degree. So the first day that they walk into the classroom, they are a higher cost employee. In addition, special education staff often work not just the school year, but they work over the summer or in what we call extended school year services. So they have more days of employment. This is true for special ed teachers. This is true for speech and language clinicians, psychologists, social workers, all of whom have to be licensed across multiple boards and agencies. And in addition, all teachers have prep time. And special ed teachers need time to prepare for their instruction also. In addition, special education teachers have to have time to work on the due process and the paperwork, which takes away from direct contact with students, which means that it takes more special ed teachers to do the job. So those are just some reasons why special ed staff are very high-cost staff. You know that the students we serve in special education are high-need students. And I'll give you an example of a student who has multiple handicaps. The student is non-ambulatory, non-verbal, medically fragile, has a special ed teacher who works with 5 other students like this, has a full-time LPN nurse with him at all times, also gets developmental adaptive physical education, works with the speech and language clinician, the occupational and physical therapist. All of that expertise surrounds this youngster, and I'm going to give you an example a little later on of how that works and why it works. In addition to high-need students, there are 4 situations where special education pays the bill, but we have no control over the costs. And in particular, I'm thinking about charter schools, where charter schools serve a high number of students with special needs, and I'm very glad they're there. But as a director of special education, when a parent makes that decision, I get the bill and I have to pay it. I have no control over the special ed services that are provided in the charter school. I have no control over the cost of those special ed services. In addition, we use intermediate school districts or in outstate the education district model. And we are extremely grateful for the services that intermediate districts provide, but they are very high-cost services. They're high-cost services because they serve students very often with very aggressive behavior, and in order to even be safe, they sometimes have 2 adults with 1 child. Second is something called zero reject, and I've had to use this very few times in my 6 years as a director. But there were times where we had a student in one of our schools. That student literally had to be in another placement for his or her own safety the next day. The only place we can turn for that kind of service is the intermediate districts. And so they really have to staff to be able to do that for us. Well, I want to talk just a bit about why special education costs, which we've just talked about being high, why they increase at a higher rate. And first and foremost, it comes down to basic math. I'm going to go back to that first-year teacher. First-year classroom teacher maybe makes $35,000. If I apply the 3% increase, the next year that teacher is going to make just over $36,000. Okay, so it's a little over a $1,000 increase. If I take the special education teacher who makes $56,000 because of all of the licensure and education and requirements, apply the same 3%, The increase in 1 year is $1,600. And so rather than education increasing at the $1,000 level for special education because it's higher cost, it's going to increase at a higher level. And so incrementally that's true for not only the salary but the TRA, the FICA, that plays out in terms of the special placements for other districts. Okay. I just asked if she wanted to interject, and she said I needed to wrap it up. So I will do.
I'm trying to be sensitive to the fact that we came in late, and we have a number of witnesses, and I know some of you have been here a long time. And Dr. Burke has prepared a very detailed analysis of some of the costs, and I'd like her to finish up, especially about and get a little bit into her pie charts. But we need to move along, too, so that you can get home.
All right. Thank you, Senator Rimmel. We have more students in special education statewide. It's about 7,000 from 2000 to 2005. Of the students in special education statewide, we have more students served in special ed for more of their day. And I believe that this is a part of the drain on the regular classrooms, where we have higher class size and the students aren't able to make it as well. So they get either referred newly to special education, or the students who are already in special ed fall out. Interestingly enough, going back to that 7,000 increase in students statewide, there is a 6,000 increase in the number of students identified as autistic during that same period of time. 7,000 increase overall, 6,000 autistic. Where the special ed funds go, and Senator Rummel asked that I go to the pie chart, so I'll go there now. Just as a little background information, White Bear Lake has about 9,000 students. We have 1,200 in special ed. It's about a 13% service rate. That's just about at the state average. 13% of the students, we have special ed teachers constituting 25% of the instructional staff. 13% of the students, 25% of the instructional staff. And 23% of the total district budget goes to special education. You look at chart number one, where we look at the actual dollars. I want you to look down towards the bottom. I don't know if yours is in color, but you'll see the dollar figure, $3.3 million. And that's in White Bear Lake. That's what we spend in a year for services for students with emotional and behavioral disorders. And that averages out to about $20,000 a student per year. That's the excess cost for the average EBD student. Next, if you go up to the corner at about 2 o'clock on the pie chart, you'll see $2.3 million, and that's for the severely multiply handicapped students that I was telling you about that had all of the services surrounding. That service is about $25,000 per year per student for kids who are served in our district. I want to take the time to point out one more, which is number three. It's actually 11 o'clock on your circle, $2 million. This is important because that $2 million is for our 284 students with specific learning disabilities. And this goes to the problem solving that you all are wrestling with, and that is how do we serve students who are less severely handicapped, who have a learning disability, not blind, hearing impaired, physically impaired. How do we serve those students with learning problems, and can we do it more economically? Right now, as soon as we put a student into special education for a learning problem, we double the cost of their education. In White Bear Lake, The average learning disabled student costs $7,500 over and above the foundation aid formula. So how can we help ourselves get services to students without putting them in this very, very expensive, highly regulated system of special education? I believe that answer is in the regular education initiatives of RTI, or Response to Intervention. In closing, and I'm going to talk just a hair more about that, but in closing, I'd like to say that special ed is a highly regulated, high-cost, necessary service. I'm not going to take the time to tell the stories, but Ms. Erickson spoke to what can happen through the efforts of special education, through assistive technology. We really do make a difference in the lives of students. It's very essential that we have special education. However, the underfunding of special education has really undermined the ability of local districts to meet the needs of kids without putting them in special ed. It's really a catch-22. And I believe very strongly that no youngster should have to be labeled as disabled just to get some help. And in White Bear Lake, that's what happens, because there are no other support services left. They've all been cut except for special education. The other ironic part is that underfunding special ed has not affected the cost of special ed. It's not reduced the cost of special ed.
Dr. Burke, can I ask you just a couple questions really quick along those lines? I know you've been focusing on the cost of the special ed students, and that is very important. But wouldn't you also say that the underfunding of special education has affected every child, every student in your district?
I believe it has. And as a special educator, and I'll speak more from my heart than the text, it's very difficult to be in special education these days. Not that I want you to feel sorry for me. However, I believe so strongly in what special education can do and does do for kids with handicaps, and it tears me apart to see what the underfunding of special ed is doing to school districts. When I know that the district has to cut $2.5 million from the education budget, and what can we cut from special ed? $350,000, maybe $400,000. We can't touch it because of maintenance of effort. And yet, in my short time there, I have watched in White Bear Lake high school students lose the ability to take as many credits as they used to because of a mandated study hall. I've watched middle school language, foreign language, disappear. And special education remains untouchable. And as we increase our class sizes and decrease the options that are available for all kids, it puts a greater burden on special education, and the hole in the pot gets bigger and bigger, and a greater percentage of those funds are falling into special education, and a greater percentage of our students are falling into special education, I believe, unnecessarily.
Thank you. Just a couple quick questions, and I know, Senator Rummel, you've got several other people that you want to have be able to speak today, and I want to be cognizant of the time. Can you tell us how much your operating referendum is? Do you know? And if you don't, that's okay.
I think it's about 7% of the budget.
It is about 7% of the budget. That's a very familiar term.
So it would be, we have a $70 million budget, and so 7% of that, Eric, help me out.
Madam Chair and
4.5.
Senator, I think it's about $841 for a pupil unit.
Okay.
Thank you.
And just noticing your cross-subsidy is $438.
That's correct. Our cross subsidy has now gone to the tune of $6 million, and that's our cross subsidy. And So when I say that we have to cut in White Bear Lake $2.5 million, and you ask, is the drain on the general ed real, and does it hurt general ed programs? The underfunding of special ed does hurt all the programs. Do we have to control the costs in special ed? Absolutely. Absolutely. And I was laughing with some other people in the back. It's been 20 years since I've been in this room testifying. I'm sure that the last time that I was testifying here, we were talking about the high cost of special education. In the 20 years since, I know that we have tried different eligibility criteria. I know that we have tried caps on salaries. We have tried proration of, underfunding as a whole, the whole state, so you prorate. We have tried taking away the inflationary factor. Until we put something in place to help those students with learning problems, and until we fund the unfunded excess costs of special education, we will continue to see increases in special ed. We really do need to put things in place for kids to support them that aren't special ed. So I thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Any questions? Okay. Yes.
Thank
you,
Madam Chair.
Yes. Representative Peterson.
I just wanted to clarify that you had no communication with the billbacks from the charter schools in terms of the special ed costs or what happens with that particular
Representative student. Excuse me real quick. Representative Peterson, you need to turn your microphone towards you. It works great when you're not talking.
I'm sorry. We'll try again. I was just clarifying that you have, in terms of the charter schools, you have no supervision regulations to work with them. It's simply a billback system with no input?
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, yes, that's correct.
Thank you. Madam Chair, one more question?
Yes, Representative Peterson.
They do not get the charter schools do not get the special ed funding. Is that
That
Dr.
is
Burke?
Correct. Madam Chair, they do, I believe, get some special education aid on their staff, but any of their excess costs are passed on to the resident district.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Burke. I'd like to introduce Danny Ulmer from Bemidji School. So we're now moving up into rural Minnesota, and he'll give us a story of how special education works out there.
Thank you, Senator Romo, Madam Chair.
Welcome.
Thank you. It's always nice to be back here testifying in front of the legislature and appreciate the opportunity. I'm also here as part of Minnesota Administrators for Special Education, and I'm their past president. I worked very closely back in 2000 with then Representative Greiling and Representative Seagram on many changes we tried to effect in special education there. I'm a 20-year-plus veteran special education director. My wife, coincidentally, is an autism teacher. We hail from Park Rapids, Minnesota, where we spent the last 6 years trying to pass a excess levy referendum. As you might have saw in the news, it went to a point where the district proposed cutting all extracurricular activities, and it finally passed. That is threatened, of course, by the cross-subsidy, Madam Chair. You're correct. Park Rapids cross-subsidy is about $500 a pupil. The excess levy referendum is about $600 a pupil. So it's hard to go back to the voters and say, oops. I'm having trouble not looking at the pictures behind you. We have a high forest fire danger up north right now, as you probably know. And there's a strange coincidence between the underfunding of special ed and the forest fire danger up north right now, believe me. I have my annual meeting tomorrow. There'll be dozens of school board representatives there, and I guarantee you, first and foremost on their minds is what's happening down here in terms of special education funding. There's hardly a district that is not struggling dearly with the underfunding of special education. And it is our hope that the legislature will will step up to the plate here, as it has done in the past, and fund these special programs that are very complicated, as my friend Barbara has shared with you, and are very labor-intensive, high-cost programs. It doesn't mean they're bad programs, but we appreciate your support.
Thank you, Mr. Ulmer. I would like to call to the table our two superintendents, Superintendent Barbara Devlin and Superintendent Ben Cannonian. Thank you. And again, we're going to try to keep it as brief as possible, but I do want the two superintendents, if possible, to address the jeopardy underfunding the growth factor puts your districts in, if you don't
and
mind.
Thank you for both for being here. And if you have a referendum, if you could also tell us what your cross subsidy is, that would be a good thing. I know that that's one of the things we found helpful as we were going through the Senate, and appreciate you being willing to be here today. And while we want to keep moving along, we also want to make sure that members get a chance to ask questions if they have them. Welcome.
Thank you.
Who's going first? Are you?
Be happy to, Madam Chair. Thank you very much. I'm Ben Cannon, Superintendent of Schools for the Burnsville League and Savage Schools, and I think coming around is a small packet that I hope will be additive to the conversation that has been ongoing in the last couple of hours with regard to education funding in general and special education funding issues in particular. What I'd like to do to begin with is express my appreciation that the committee is looking so intently at this problem. I applaud you for doing so. And I think the bills before you are helpful in that regard, and I appreciate that as well. Our district, what I want to do is give you a quick thumbnail sketch of the magnitude of the problem in our district and how that impacts us in District 191, Burnsville, Eakin, Savage. We, too, had a referendum fail, and we had to make a budget reduction in the neighborhood of $5 million for next year. We've done that. We have a rather substantial cross-subsidy, as indicated by the handout, and I'll briefly indicate the scope of that for you. If you look directly at the handout, you see that in 2005-06, that's the last year for which we have complete numbers, we had revenue sources from five different revenue sources, and the total of the revenues to support special education services received in our district was $13.6 million. And if you look at the middle of the page, you see an expenditure for special education in 3 years, including the years 2005-06, of $18.7, $19.8, and $21.1 million, which reveals a gross cross subsidies of 4.8, 6.8, and most recently $7.5 million, and a percentage, a declining percentage, in other words, participation in that cost. And I thought you might be interested in a bit of historical perspective. If you look back at 1992, for which figures are available, you see that in that year we had revenues of about $7.5 million in our district for special ed, expenditures of 7.7, the difference being simply 0.2, a very small difference between the expenditures and the costs. You asked about the level of our excess levy authority. It's approximately $840 or $50. I don't have the exact number in my head, but I bet someone there does. And it's that generates, I think, roughly $13 million. So the cross subsidy is a large portion of that, but not the entirety of it. There are also three other pages on my handout. It looks a lot like the columns of numbers that you so carefully went through just a few minutes ago, but I thought I would take the opportunity to tell you what your work looks like from our perspective. We have been trying, as you have, to follow the legislation and to understand the bills that are being proposed and that have made their way to the committee before you. And we wanted particularly to know what that meant to our school district and how we could understand it. So you have three pages, and I'll be brief on these three pages. The first of them are projections that we used to develop our budget in January. And we made really two assumptions. One was that the basic formula allowance would increase perhaps by 2.5%. We also imagined that the special education support would increase by that same percentage. We hoped that that was conservative, and we developed our budget based on that. And what I wanted to point out to you is that if you look at the basic formula changes then based on those assumptions for our district, you see that although the per pupil allowance would increase by 2.5%, the amount that we would receive would increase by a much smaller percentage, and there's two reasons for that. One is that the basic formula allowance, as you know, does not encompass 100% of the base. It's about 65% of our base. And, of course, the second problem, and this is truly what exacerbates it, is that we experience declining enrollment. And so we have fewer pupils against which to make that multiple. So the problem with which we deal is that we often hear that there's been an increase of a certain percentage, and it's an accurate statement to say so, but it doesn't translate to the bottom line in exactly that same way for at least our school district, and I think all school districts. So at the bottom, you can see that we imagined a relatively modest increase in our revenues for the coming year. If you look at pages 2 and 3, we've tried to the best of our ability to translate what is before you for our district to see what that might mean, and I thought it might be useful for you to have at least our best estimate about how that might translate in District 191. Looking only at the House proposal and assuming that to the best of our understanding that would have become law, it looks to us as though that would produce an increase for us at the bottom line of about $2.4 million over the current year. Now, it's not a base year, but over what we actually received or expect to receive in the current year. That would represent about a 2.6% overall increase for us, and that's positive. And that assumes the 3% increase in the basic formula that the House bill, I think, provides for. And it also incorporates a rather healthy increase in the area of special education, nearly 10%. And finally, if you look at the last page, I know that today you're only talking about one of two very important Senate bills that would contribute to education funding. But we tried our best to combine the virtues of those two bills to see what might happen. And again, as you look to the bottom line for 2007-08, that would translate into an increase for our school district of about $2.8 million, or roughly 3.4%. These are important increases, for sure, but I thought it would be interesting for you to see that when you work your way through the millions and the numbers and how that all impacts across bills, et cetera, what that ends up looking like for at least one school district, ours.
Thank you very much. And real quickly, and then to Representative Heidkirchen, I know that we don't have a calculator on our website the way the House is. I was just asking Mr. Nauman, and if you look at your last page as regards to the Senate proposal, it should roughly be in the second, in 2008-09, it would be roughly 4.5% more. Just so members know, it doesn't decrease, it does increase because of that.
We simply, excuse me, Madam Chair, we simply didn't have enough information
okay.
to make
it. We just wanted to make sure that we were reinforcing that it would continue that the upward trajectory. Representative Heidkirchen.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I think you brought up some interesting points here when you look at the spreadsheets, Superintendent, and the debate oftentimes is where is it best to put the money. And I think you alluded to the fact that any one school district will look different than another. If you do the runs in special ed, if you do what the Senate's proposal is, you're going to see different numbers that you're going to see here in comparison with the House is. And again, depending upon what superintendent I ask, where would be the best place to put the money? On the general formula, or would it be best to put more money in a special ed? You're going to get different answers all across the state. But I appreciate the spreadsheet you have here. And if I was going to ask you the question, if you were sitting here, if you were going to do what's right for the entire state of Minnesota, you get together, we've had the C report, among other things, where would you put the money, on the general formula, or would you put more of it into the special ed?
Madam Chair, Representative Heidecker.
Superintendent.
Happily, I'm not worried about the state. I'm more worried about District 191. But I do think that the testimony that you heard just prior to us being here is very compelling. Much, if not all, of what you heard is accurate, meaning that there's a great difference between what we need and what we are required to provide for and what we have to pay for that. That doesn't suggest that we're reluctant to provide those services to special education children. Far from it. We want to do that. But it is becoming increasingly difficult when the cost of those services, mandated as they are, drains so sufficiently. So my best guess, it's certainly true for our district, but my best guess is that most districts are best served by having that cross-subsidy addressed in a substantial way.
Senator Saltzman?
Yes. Just another question, Madam Chair. You know, in the past 2 years, the legislature has given school districts a 4% increase on the formula, and the public believes that they received a 4% increase on the formula. In your district, and maybe for the other superintendents since he's at the table, where did most of that 4% formula increase probably go?
Madam Chair, Representative Senator, I think the answer is pretty obvious that the cost of our, well, let me answer it this way. We did a five-year study of baseline revenues and expenditures in our district in the general fund. And over that five-year period, there were some larger and smaller changes, but we averaged revenue growth of slightly less than 2% at the bottom line in the general fund for the last 5 years. And we averaged spending growth of also slightly less than 2% overall. But the growth of spending in special education was approximately 7%. So you can see that the answer is that as we were meeting those increasing needs in the area of special education, we were not only not continuing to meet the needs in the rest of the program funded by general education funding, but we were reducing them substantially.
So just a follow-up, Madam Chair, if I may?
Yes, Senator Salson.
So if one of the things that we may want to do is to help school districts have transparency and honesty in budgeting, if we just continue to give you formula increases, which I'm guessing as a legislator looks really good on, you know, your legislative report, I gave 4% to school districts. It's, you know, is it difficult for you to then explain to the public why you don't have 4% for general education classrooms?
Superintendent?
Thank you. I think the answer is yes, and that's certainly true. But I think the experience of the last several hours suggests that explaining it at all is very difficult in many cases. But yes, we are better served when budgeting outcomes are discussed in a public venue in a way that people expect and understand. An example is that I know that you do your work on a biennial basis. That's entirely understandable. But when people hear percentages, they automatically think of annual increases. And that's a very confusing situation for people in the community paying attention to school costs, because they hear a percentage and they imagine it relates to a single year when it might relate to a biennium.
Thank you very much.
And Superintendent, I know that I personally have been finding that a challenge this year, because we have one-time money that's available for us but doesn't go out into the out years, but that often gets put into a statement that there's 9.5% or 10% of money available, when in reality we've got about 2% and 2% inflation that we know we can work on in the future. And so it's hard when we're trying to explain to people. I know that in our own district, one of the things that's hard too is when we did the 4% and 4%, but then people saw a property tax increase, they thought it was on top of the 4%, and they thought, you know, they thought the schools got more money, where I know that Mr. Von Korf will be talking a little bit, will testify that's not the case. And so I think it's very challenging for you to explain your budgets, and I think it's challenging for us to as well. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative Heikergen.
Thank you. And one of the testifiers here had mentioned just previously that the important piece is a special ed of coming up with those monies for the school districts. But another thing that has not been brought up is the 01 tax reform bill that we talked a little bit about earlier. But then again, within the school districts I have 7 school districts in statutory operating debt. And a major reason is perhaps not just special ed, but they can't pass referendums, because of what we did to the tax reform bill. They're missing the tax value that they need to pass a referendum. We pass a referendum 1% over Melrose. It's very little dollars. But if you do it in a district like Edina, you raised a lot of money. So those are issues also in play. It's not just, we have a lot of issues. We got a lot of categoricals. We have a lot of things. Burnsville, I don't know if this year, if the school district of Burnsville have been trying to get Melrose to qualify for integration aid. And I think Burnsville qualified this year, if I'm not correct on that. But there's a lot of different pots of money that we need to bring to the table when we want to look at the whole picture. But it's just
sure. And Representative Heiker, one of the reasons why ultimately in all the conversations we had this session,
that we went down this path is because we're trying to reduce the reliance on the operating levy referendums, because we know how hard that is, and that if we can figure out how to put the, I guess, the cork back in the bottom of that bucket so that the districts can actually have more of that money that's flexible. And then I would say, I know that if Representative Greiling was able to be here right now, one of the things she'd say is, yes, let's fix that, and then let's at least acknowledge that once you've dealt with that problem, that we haven't even gotten to inflation for the school. So I think it is a real challenge. And obviously, I'm personally familiar with the districts you're serving, and they've got some real struggles. And that's why we're grappling with this. And the real concern is now that we're at this huge number, how are we ever going to afford if we don't fix it now to deal with it in the future? So you bring up a very good point. Should we continue, Senator Rummel?
And I would like to invite Superintendent Devlin to address the members.
Welcome, thank Superintendent Devlin.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. I think just to, in the interest of time, I don't need to tell you how much special ed costs. You've had a lot of testimony on that. I'll just say by way of background that in terms of the total cumulative special education cross-subsidy for Richfield, it was this year it's over $2 million. And the portion of the cross-subsidy that's simply due to capping is about $500,000 less in revenue than we were getting than we thought we were going to receive. Statewide, I think it's $141 million that districts didn't receive in revenue due to the cross-subsidy. On page 2 of the handout that you should have of my testimony, I talk a little bit about what happens to school districts when we don't receive our full payment for special education, when we do have to draw from general fund revenues to subsidize. And you should have gotten a handout of my testimony. It creates a cycle of going to your voters and asking for local levy increases, and then that's always counterbalanced with making program and service reductions. That's the part that's so frustrating. In Richfield, for example, since the year 2000, we've had 4 operating referenda. We were one of the many districts that lost a referendum in 2001, the year that so many failed. And then we had successful referenda in 2002, 2003, 2005. And the frustrating part of that is that you end up using a lot of the local levy referendum money that you get when you don't get adequate funding on the other end. It really, you can't use it to really add to your programs and services and sustain them. So it's counterbalanced by continuously trying to find ways of being efficient and then making reductions. And one of the attachments that I gave on page 3 of the handout, it's a partial listing of some of the efforts that we've made in Richfield to become more efficient and to contain costs. And there was a question earlier about what impact that has in terms of the educational program for general ed students. And I'll just highlight a few of them. We closed an elementary school. We replaced licensed school nurses with one registered nurse in one location and health assistants at other locations. With few exceptions, students can no longer register for 7 classes per day at our high school. We've eliminated access to some off-site programming. We've really reduced the amount of support staff that we have available in areas such as guidance counseling, social work services, gifted, talented media specialists, and so forth. We try to find low or no cost. We use, for example, interns for social work services where we can. We've raised class sizes. And as we get more revenues, we try to restore some of that, but it's very difficult to sustain it over time when you don't have continuously sufficient revenue.
So, Superintendent Devlin, thanks. Out of curiosity, if the Senate position were to become law, what would you do? One of the things I know that the governor, certainly an important initiative, has brought forward has to do with high schools and rigor. And if students can no longer take 7 classes a day, that's a little disconcerting.
Right. I think I tried to answer that question yesterday. We use it to, in our district, we have over 50% of our students are low income. We've got over a fourth of our kids are limited English proficient and so forth. So we keeping class sizes low is really important. All-day kindergarten is very important for us. We'd love to have some additional funding for that, but if we didn't have to spend so much money on our special ed cross subsidy, it would help free up dollars for other things. We would rigor at all levels is important to us in making sure we have challenge opportunities and can appropriately differentiate learning, having the support services that we need for some of our students. So there's a lot of great ways that we could use to spend the money. The last page of is on my handout, just details the $5.8 million worth of program and service cutbacks that we've had to make since the year 2000. And it's that kind of thing where a combination of insufficient increases on an annual basis and then having to draw from general ed services to really meet your special ed mandate. There was a question earlier that someone asked about what evidence do you have that special ed is getting more of the funds? And one of the things that I did was I looked back at the history of how much money we're spending on in terms of classroom teachers and then how much money we have that we're spending on what proportion of our staff is special ed and ESL. In 1981-82, classroom teachers comprised 75% of Richfield's teaching staff. Special ed and ESL teachers combined comprised about 10% of our total teaching staff. This year, special ed makes up 21.4% of our staff and ESL 6.5% of our licensed teaching staff. And the proportion of our regular classroom teachers has dropped to 63.8%. And I think that's a good indication of the amount of effort that's going in terms of where our revenues are being spent.
Does anybody have any more questions? Thank you. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'd like to invite the two school board members who are here today. We have Jerry Von Kroff from St.
Thank you.
From St. Cloud, and we have Kim Green from Osseo. Welcome.
Welcome.
2 to 3 minutes. Yes. Do you have my handout?
You'd have Mr. Von Kroff go first then,
yes.
Sarahs? Mr. Von Kroff, for the record, would you mind stating your name?
I'm Jerry Von Kroff. I've been an officer of the St. Cloud School District for the last 4 years, chair, vice chair, treasurer 2 years. We're about the 17th largest school district in the state of Minnesota. There's a couple points that I would like to make that I hope will add value to what's already been said. I wish that chart were up.
Put it back up?
Yeah. We're really talking about this purple part of the chart. And about the purple part, the deficit growing, and that's very, very important. You need to watch the size of the growth in the purple part. When I came to the school board in 2003, our share of the purple part was $5 million. We had a $5 million special ed deficit. Our deficit is larger than many districts, proportionate number of schools, primarily because we have a very high non-public education population. And that's very important for you to understand. The purple part is not equally distributed. If you have, and I think Senator Wieger's district is in the same position, if you have high non-public student count, it may be wrong, but you wind up having a much higher percentage of special ed in your district because every special ed student is a public school student, but only the public but when you have a large non-public school count, the people who are not in special ed, they of course are not in our universe. So we have an 18% special ed count. If you talked in the back room with some of the neighboring school superintendents, they might suggest that we are out of control. But in fact, when you adjust for our non-public school count, we're right there with them. But the result of that is because you treat us as if you count our special ed payments based on the number of kids we have, we're treated as if we have way less special ed students. And so when I came to the school district in 2003, we had a tremendously disproportionate share of the purple part. Okay? We live with that. Our operating referendum basically covers our special ed deficit. All right. Now, as the purple part has grown, the way the formula works is you give a larger share of the purple part to those of us that have large deficits in the first place. All right? So our deficit is growing now to about $8.5 million. And the reason is the bigger you are in terms of excess cost problems, the less you've helped. So we are in a desperate situation. There's both an equity situation, and if you went to our neighboring school districts, as Representative Heider suggested, some of them would sort of like to see you put the money on the formula because they're, over the last 4 years, they've made out much better than we. Our effective increase in the last biennium was 7.1%. Because 25% of our budget is in special ed. We are not going to be able to go back to our voters. Our referendum is up this year. And if we have to go back to our voters and explain to them why now, instead of a $5 million operating referendum, we need an 8.1 or 8.2 or maybe $9 million operating referendum just to keep us even with where we are. The other thing I'd like to say, I brought down there's somebody, and then I'll be done. We have in today's St. Cloud Daily Times a young woman. She's one of our Beat the Odds students. She's a young woman. She's 18 years old. Her family has left her. She comes from a dysfunctional family. She's working her way through high school. She's in an apartment waiting tables. She is the first. She comes from a chemically dependent family. And she has decided to turn her life around. She, for me, and she's not a special ed student, she, for me, is the symbol of who is getting hurt by the cross-subsidy. Because the districts who are disproportionately in deficit are the districts who serve young people like her more. If you colored the districts according to poverty or minority status up there, many of the districts that have high special ed deficits would also fall in that category because of the correlation between poverty and ELL and the special ed deficit. So the districts who are carrying the growth in the purple part are the districts with the greatest general fund needs. So it's just backwards and upside down. I never understood when I came to the district with the $5 million deficit why it was my job to go out and do a referendum to get the $5 million back when things were supposedly good. I've been a referendum chair twice. One time we lost, one time we won by 65 votes. It was very difficult to explain to citizens why you're asking us to campaign to bring our deficit up to the point where we're just providing the general revenues that you ask us to do. Ultimately, it seems to me you either need to fund the whole deficit, I know you're not thinking about doing that, or for goodness sake, give us school board members the responsibility to levy, like city council people do, for that deficit. And then hold us accountable. If you gave us responsibility and held us accountable, if you think it's maniacs and insane school board members that are making that purple thing grow, if that's what you think, then for goodness sake, take us over, run the district yourself, or put us into receivership. It's not the case, but give us the ability instead of running out to people in our school district and trying to convince them to fund what you have mandated us to spend. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Mr. Van Kirken. Representative Heikirken.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and a very good job, Mr. Van Korf, presented it. As I mentioned earlier, and you're going to see this as we continue, that there are unique problems, and you have a very unique problem, the fact that I think I have a school district over at Melrose that probably plays out quite similar to yours with the non-public school children. But yours is very unique. When you look at it, you're bound to have more problems than others. And it would be nice that we could do like we do in state government or other places, where we could do some earmarks for particular problems, and yours definitely is one. You have some set of circumstances going on there that perhaps, I don't think there's any other school district, state of Minnesota, has unique problems that you do in that area.
We're the canary in the coal mine.
Mr. Van Korf?
Yes. Madam Chair, we are the canary in the coal mine. It has to do with the factors, also hospital. We have a number of youth service programs serving the area, but this is not just our problem. And I think you said eloquently, it's very important that we take responsibility for all of the costs that are here and let the public know that it's there.
And I think before we go on, I think this is a good time just to pull back out our constitutional mandate. One of the things that really struck me, Representative Heikirken, when I looked at the chart that contrasted what would happen if we had done straight formula versus special ed first, we want to do both, obviously, is that we are now creating two kinds of school districts. And while St. Cloud may have some unique situations, we all think we're pretty unique. Chaska started out with just a few $100,000 a few years ago. They're now at $1.5 million, will be up at $2.2 million. And frankly, they only have like a 9% special ed population. So I think if we're going to have that uniform education across the state, if we talk a lot about equity, if equity is important to us, this would be a place for us to be really cautious about not making a mistake about thinking that it's just the St. Cloud districts. And so I think you're going to keep bringing up those really good points, but I think, you know, again, as we're looking at the broader picture, this unfortunately is not something that districts can get out of on their own. And in contrast to St. Cloud, even though Mr. Van Korf and I have personally had a number of conversations about giving more authority for more property tax increases, which I think is not the direction that most of us want to be going right now, the reality is the district right next to us, Ricori, can't pass a levy. The city of Rockville can't pass a levy. I don't know what some districts would do if they had to start doing some of that. So we'll continue down this path of talking, but as unique as I like to think my community is, we're not that unique. Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have with us also Kim Green, and she is from Osseo, and she is also a school board member. And again, the school board members, and I was so pleased that Jerry made the plea that he did. We have talented, committed school board members. I know we have some sitting around the table here today. These people work very, very hard in an almost impossible situation. So I'm really pleased that you're here to speak on behalf of the citizens and the school board.
Thank you.
Welcome, Ms. Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Rummel, members of the committee. My name is Kim Green. I'm currently the vice chair at Osseo. We serve 22,000 students. We have 40% free and reduced lunch. We're the third most diverse in the state. In Osseo, we are struggling to maintain the quality of our programming with the current funding levels that we currently have. We believe in being fiscally responsible. We created a policy to maintain a 5% fund balance that equates to about 2 weeks of operating income. We spend 79% of our budget on instruction, one of the highest in the state. We meet our obligation to our students every single day. All of the students that bring their different needs, we meet their obligation. We are asking that the legislation fully fund special education to meet their obligation from 2003. Therefore, funding special education, if no other piece of legislation funding happens, is critical to us. In early March, we were presented with our special education needs forecast for next year, and the numbers are coming in at over $1 million already. This year, for the very first time, our special ed transportation expenses have surpassed our general student transportation costs at nearly $7 million. Providing the state dollars to fully fund special education is vital to our success in sustaining the programming that we provide for all of our students from our general education revenue. The cross-subsidy in Osseo this year for 2005-06 was $486. Next year, it's anticipated to be $536. This translates to over just $10 million in revenue that we could be using to keep our current teachers, not cut programming such as fine arts, student support, and school safety, or increased fees for activities. I'm not an advocate for increasing taxes on a whim. I pay them as well. But I implore you to consider a way to fully fund special education, and whether there is a dedicated revenue stream as an overall tax increase or a reform from mandates, we need your support. In early March, I listened to State Economist Tom Stinson's presentation to the Senate regarding the state economic forecast, and he pointed out two different points. To retain our quality of the workforce in the years to come, knowing that our aging population, we will be losing a significant number of highly skilled workers. Number two, for that reason, we need to focus on building our workforce with highly skilled workers. This only happens with a quality education, a proven economic driver. I can't tell you how important it is to our school districts that they receive this funding for special education now. 3% on Osseo's general base ed revenue, it comes to about $4.7 million to us. Although special ed mandates will siphon the majority of these dollars next year, offering little relief to our current programming, we anticipate that our class sizes will still increase next year as a result of our commitment to retaining the 5% fund balance. And this is the hard part. Our taxpayers are frustrated. We have no choice but to seek additional levy authority next year. We haven't settled in on the amount yet, but we could go to the cap, which is $16 million. If the special ed was fully funded, the $10 million that we would receive would certainly help our taxpayers. If it doesn't succeed, and I hope that it does, 22,000 children will suffer. I guarantee it. Parents will see some classrooms with 35 to 40 kids due to reduction in teaching staff and a reduction in program options, which are the very tools that help us close the achievement gap and prepare the high-quality workforce that Minnesotans have known. Should this happen, our community will become more frustrated, less trusting, and probably even angry. They will look to the legislature and to school boards to question our decision-making. If you do nothing else this session, I repeat, please fully fund special education. And what I wish you all is peace at night when you make your decisions as an elected official, because I understand the decision-making process. Thank you much for your time.
Thank you. Before you both go, I'm wondering if you'd briefly tell us what you'd do if we were able to not entirely fix the problem, Mr. Reinkorf, but at least if we were able to restore the funds that remove that cap, as it were, fix the gap.
We have cut 17 special ed positions in our next year's budget. We would not be restoring any of those positions. We need the money to cover the growth in special ed deficit in order to keep us afloat and meet our commitments on the regular student side. And I think that's basically what districts are going to have to do is to cover the large growth in cross subsidy.
Thank you. And for Osseo, Madam Chair, for Osseo, it's not clear yet what we would have to cut. Even if we pass a $16 million levy, there is still the likelihood that we will be under that 5% fund balance, and there might be some budget adjustments as well. So at this point, it's hard to say. In 2002, we cut $14.7 million. So,
Ms. Green, I guess what I was asking is if we were able to get the funds that we have in the Senate position, what would you be able to either restore or do differently? Hopefully, it sounds like you have a pretty big challenge on your hands right
well,
now.
Clearly.
So you may say you'll be cutting less.
Yes, that's exactly right, cutting less.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
And Senator Rummel, I believe you have one more person. I know people are being very patient. We're close to being done.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much.
Mary Ciccone, will bring to us the parent perspective. Mary's been following us through this whole process, and I think she can capitalize it very well from the parent perspective.
Welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members. My name is Mary Ciccone. I'm with Parents United for Public Schools. In summation, we see that the trajectory is that special ed costs will increase and the state's portion will decrease. We see that districts are paying off this cross-subsidy through local levies. It's no coincidence that Stillwater had a failed levy of $4.1 million and they cut $3.5 million. Their cross-subsidy would have been $4.1 million. St. Paul's levy passed $593 per student. Their cross-subsidy, $567 per student. After six long years, Park Rapids gets its $600 per pupil, $488 of it goes to cross-subsidy. What might be new is the understanding that taxpayers know this. Taxpayers get it. They know that this is where their local levy dollars are going. Also, what might be new is parents understand that to pay the cross-subsidy, to buy down cross-subsidy frees up general ed dollars that can be used for class sizes, AP courses, IB courses, and be able to be there for the rigor. Putting available funds into reinstating this growth factor is really a straightforward way to deal with these issues for schools. And it's not hard to explain. That's the benefit. It pays the credit card bill before pricing out the big screen TV. I really understand the desire to put money on the formula. Why wouldn't you desire that? But money on the formula gives people the perception that you're increasing funding to schools. And let's be perfectly frank. Any dollars on the formula will migrate across the ledger to pay the cross-subsidy. And imagine being the parent tapped on the shoulder to run this year's levy replacement campaign, and you have to go out and say, oh, but we got 3% and 3% in all-day kindergarten, and we got money for AP and IB and gifted and talented, but we really need money to pay our bills. Many of us have been in that position. And to be perfectly honest with you, that's how schools have gotten the reputation of being the black hole of funding. Never enough. I say let's be perfectly frank and honest with the public and let them know that you are trying to do what is fiscally responsible and pay the bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator Saltzman.
It's always hard to follow, follow her, Madam Chair. But to Mrs. Ciccone, you and I have both worked on levy referendums together. And I spoke to a group of 200 parents at a Stillwater Junior High about the $818 levy that needs to be renewed. But I think you have really summarized the dilemma that we have here is that, of course, we want to be able to talk about wonderful programs that we can fund. And I think that our first testifier today, it was Dr. Burke, talked about, you know, why the costs for special ed are going up. And it sounded like all of the Senate's proposal is going to fund these kind of things. And yet I think we absolutely have to discuss the Senate proposal in terms of how we are restoring dollars to the general education funds and school districts. That is what is critical to understand here to the House members who are still here with us today. I think it's very important to think about that. We are restoring dollars to the general fund so that school districts can do all of the wonderful things that we want them to do and to be able to do some of those things. But to be honest, there was a decision made by the legislature in 2003 that the way we were going to balance the state budget was that we weren't going to pay some of our bills. And yet school districts had to continue to fund those kind of programs. So this is a way of saying there's a bill out there that is due to our school districts, and we have to pay that bill so that we can be honest as we move forward. It's not something that maybe we really want to do because, it looks better. It feels better to talk about, you know, putting all these dollars into all these wonderful programs. So I think we do that, but I will also say, you know, in my closing remark here is that it's not just about funding a problem. We also want to be talking about what we can do in terms of reform to lower the incidence of children who are inappropriately referred to special education because they're not getting the early intervention fast enough. And that's what we can do to be responsible. It's not just more funding for special ed. It's also what can we do to make sure that children achieve, which is the most important goal, and also to hold down these costs. So I welcome that discussion as well, and thank all the testifiers for being here today.
Thank you, Mary.
Madam Chair, I'd just like to...
You've got a few more comments before we finish
up? Yes, just wrap this up a little bit. Once again, I would like to acknowledge the leadership of Senator Stumpf, because all of us sitting around the table had all kinds of wonderful ideas of what we wanted to do for public education, and he held us to the line. It was Senator Stumpf's vision for us to stay focused on the real issue. Our funding bill basically does, these are just the highlights. It sets the special education appropriation at current statutory formula levels, restores the special education regular aid growth factor at 4.6%, it restores the excess cost growth factor at 2%, and it substantially reduces the special education cross-subsidy from education. In short, it plugs that hole, that leak that was in the bucket on the slide I showed you earlier. If you look at the graph below, you see a line that's going up and up and up. That's the projected cross-subsidy that districts will be facing. The Senate bill... immediately in 2007 pays off the cap gap, and then it funds at the growth factor at the 4.6%. And if you look over to the far end, you can see that gap, or the substantial reduction in what the cross subsidy will be. This is a significant amount of dollars, and it's a significant step toward providing stability for school districts, as we heard from the various superintendents and people who testified. In addition, the Senate bill tames the sleeping giant. You know, the bad news is that funding the cross-subsidy, taking care of the special education growth factor, is very expensive. Our bill provides over $500 million in fiscal years 07, 08, and 09 in order to pay the unpaid portion of the state's obligation. But the good news is that this bill can be funded out of existing revenues in the budget forecast. It eliminates the cap gap in 2007, and then it stabilizes special education funding into the future. That means there are dollars this year for our schools. And finally, the Senate bill also includes, as Senator Salzman has alluded to, several intervention strategies. You know, it wasn't, I can go up to a gas pump and say, you know, I only want to pay $1.25 for my gas, but that doesn't change the price at the pump. Putting a cap on the cost of special education doesn't change the cost. And in our bill, we have actually put some strategies or interventions in place so that we can begin to intervene and bring down some of those costs. And if you go back to Dr. Burke's testimony, she pointed out two very expensive groups of students who, with early intervention, whose special education costs could be significantly reduced. And so that's one of the things I want to highlight for you in terms of the wholeness of this bill. In the graph down below, I've shown you going out the gross aid versus the actual funding under current statute. And then underneath is what the Senate funding will do. And as you can see, it does not fully match the projected gross aid that will be needed, but it gets much, much closer than we've been in the past. Members of the committee, I am going to argue for the value of this Senate position. Senator Stumpf often said to us that we have to take our obligation seriously. It would be so easy to do something glamorous. It would be so easy to do something fancy. we are not going to get any big headlines by funding the gap. But in reality, if we want to do good policy, if we want to do significant policy, this is where I believe we need to put our energy. We need to fund that bad debt. That's first. And then by using a combination of property tax relief and the restoration of the growth factor, we can return some semblance of stability to our school districts. The graph down below is a straw poll. It is not scientific. It is not totally accurate. But 19 superintendents answered the question for me. If you wanted to name your top three priorities for funding this year, what would they be? So the responses from those 19 superintendents are below. You will notice that 63% of them, their first priority was to fund special education, and for 31%, their second priority. In other words, 94% of the superintendents in that little straw poll put special education as their first or second priority. And then the second priority, 22%, only one-third of the respondents said they would put money on the formula. And a combination of first and second choice, that would be 72%. Now, granted, this is not a scientific poll, but it does illustrate a trend that we heard throughout the session. This is the sleeping giant. This is what we need to take care of. This is good policy for a second reason. As you heard from your local school board members, this returns control to the local population. By making good on its obligation, the Senate bill allows districts to use their general funds to meet the needs of their students. And in doing so, their credibility is restored. And I can't tell you how important this is going to be for those districts who have to go out and raise levies and referenda this year. The policy committee, as I told you earlier, visited a wide variety of districts. And what we found is that from district to district, and one of our representatives mentioned this earlier, the needs are different. We should not be taking a one-size-fits-all solution. Sometimes I wonder who we think we are that all of the good ideas have to come from the Capitol. All the good ideas have to come from either the governor or the legislature. If we return the control to the local elected responsible persons, we are going to see a lot of good ideas that deserve to be recognized. And it's one of the reasons I think this is good policy. The chart below is the same 19 superintendents in their straw poll telling me if we fully funded special education, what they would do with their general fund dollars. The largest, many of them gave me more than one answer, so that's why you see so many answers there. But 68% of the responses said reduce class sizes. That's a good thing. We all want to do that. We would do that if we increased the formula, maybe. But this is what the local folks would do. 57% would restore programs and or staff. And then you see all the other good ideas we've been hearing about all session long spread out across the table. But the two big things that we could see happening just by taking care of the special ed funding gap would get taken care of. The third reason this is good policy is it provides for all students. And probably this is the most important thing. This is not new money for special education. This is not more money for special education. I'm going to say that again and again. This is paying an unpaid bill. This is an obligation we had that we suspended. This is not new money for special education. But by funding our obligation, what we do is we relieve the general education fund so that school districts can provide for the rest of the students. It ensures that dollars for our regular students are spent on our regular students. I just want to close. The Senate bill is honest budgeting. It's plain and simple. We've heard people testify it. Before we can hold our school districts accountable for their spending, we have to hold ourselves accountable to fund the mandates we present. Thank you very much, and I apologize that this took so long.
Thank you, Senator Saltzman. I think you summed up quite nicely what we've been working on all session. Any other members from the Senate conferees that anything else you want to add? Well, it's a lot to think about. I think you can see, have a pretty good idea about how we got to the point where we said, let's be dealing with the basics. Let's plug that hole, and why we felt like it was important to find some other money elsewhere to be doing some of the other things that Representative Heikkerk and you were talking about. Any other thoughts or comments? Otherwise, I'll let you know what's going on for tomorrow. Yes, Representative Heikkerk.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and it would be fair for me to say that I'm speaking for our side completely over here. But anyways, we have an ex officio member here, but she can't vote. But anyways, that's right. But I mean, we do have, and we will bring forth, too, we do have a special ed provision, and there's money earmarked from the House side as well that we'll bring up later. And it was a very good discussion, and there are distinct problems, and depending upon which school district you look at, and again, I'm speaking on my own behalf right now. And I know that we can address the disparities of what a student perhaps out in Wabasso may be getting at $6,500 and Minneapolis is getting at $13,000. Some of those monies are earmarked. The categoricals, et cetera, are earmarked towards that. Just the alternative facilities aid is $1,000 per kid from Minneapolis. So there's integration aid. There's a lot of funding that is not available to some of those school districts already, nor is there an access to fund because there is no way they can pass a referendum. If you look at the referendums not passed the state of Minnesota, last time I looked, there was 24 of them, and just about each and every one of them was out state. So there's distinct problems out there as well. And I hope we don't forget that in the discussion. But we know that there's a special problem with special ed. We're not refuting that. We're not arguing with that. We just want to make sure that everything's put on the table in a fair and equitable manner. Thank you.
And I think that that's certainly a concern we share, which, in all honesty, is why we ended up at this place first. But we'll have lots of opportunity to talk about. We may have to get a few of your members up to speed a little bit more, but I'm sure we'll be able to do that. Our plan for tomorrow, the House, my understanding, is going in at 9 o'clock. Representative Greiling believes that we should be able to meet at 1:30. If the House goes longer, like the Senate did today, it will be following when you are done with session. And the plan at this point is to pick up the side-by-sides and be going through the language. And our hope is that we can also then instruct our staffs to come back with same and similar recommendations, because we think there are some places that we ought to be able to get moving on pretty quickly. And as soon as we have a target number, obviously we like the target number we talked about yesterday, the one we hope for. But once we have that number, we'll be able to really get down to crunching. So thank you all, and the E-12 Conference Committee is adjourned.